Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Mission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight our topic of discussion is the writer, director, and producer, Jane Campion. Joining me for tonight's discussion are Aaron White. Say hello.
Hello.
And Perry Seibert. Say hello.
I'm quite the town freak, which satisfies.
Yeah, so, you know, now, this is a person who's had a pretty long career, and while her films have, found an audience the world over, she really is a very Australian, New Zealand director, and that can't be, that can't be ignored. So, with that said, I think I'll start with you, Aaron. How did we first come to the works of Jane Campion?
Oh, gosh. I mean, The Piano is just one of those films, right? Everyone knows it, even if they haven't seen it. And Filmstruck played it when Filmstruck exists, R.I.P.
I missed that.
I don't remember. It's been a while now because Filmstruck's been dead for a while now. But they played it, and it's like, oh, I finally have a chance to see this movie that everyone knows but nobody since 1993. And so The Piano is where I start. Actually, time out. my roommate was in a John Keats class when Bright Star came out. And we didn't get to see it because it only released in like 30 theaters in the United States, and it didn't come anywhere near.
Half of them were literally art museums.
Yeah, it did not play anywhere near Marion, Indiana, is all I'm going to say.
You mean they didn't get Pollock
either? Kind of my, yeah, it didn't even hit Indiana.
I don't think Marion was necessary in that sentence.
Hey, you would be surprised at some of the movies Indianapolis got.
That's true.
But, outside of Indy. Where was I? So that was kind of the start, of my true consciousness of her beyond, the existence of a movie called The Piano. And then finally I got to see The Piano on Filmstruck several years ago and made it my life's work to see all of her life's work, which I think I've done now. There might be a few shorts that I've missed.
But So Perry, how about you? How did you first come to Campion?
The first movie I saw was also The Piano, but I saw it in the theater when it was out initially. But I remember Siskel and Ebert reviewing An Angel at My Table. So that's how I first came to the name. I'm like, okay. And that, for whatever reason, the name stuck with me. And it took me many, 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 many years before I finally saw An Angel at My Table. But The Piano was such an, I like how Aaron phrased it. It's one of those movies. Somebody says it every episode, right? It's stupid to call anything a perfect movie. Piano's a perfect movie.
It really is damn cool. I mean, it really is.
Yeah.
It may as well be.
And so same with Aaron at that point. I think I have seen everything since then in the theater. I was fortunate enough to be a working critic when Bright Star came out. So I did see it in the theater.
Yep. Now, I'm going to say this. I have never seen a Jane Campion film in the theater. I have, however, seen all of them. My first one was Piano, which I got to see probably, I'm going to say, when it hit cable, so like 95, because back then, you know, it took movies a year and a half, 2 years to hit cable rather than 3 months.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that usually they'd hit VHS a year later, and then about 6 months to a year after that, they'd go on cable. And, it was great. And I definitely remember, you know, all the critics talking about it, you know, Siskel and Ebert just falling over themselves to heap praise upon it, particularly Ebert. You know, just like with Aaron, I was like, huh, I'm definitely going to have to see everything this person's made. And so here we are. So now I'm going to ask you, Perry, what do you think the major theme in her work is?
It's such a great question.
That's the big one.
if there is a topic I think she returns to over and over, it is, I mean, it's sex, but it's always sex as a metaphor for something else. it's a metaphor for understanding oneself more often than not, right? That's why we can have Ada, and we can have In the Cut, and we can have Bright Star, and we can have Power of the Dog. These are all I think she wants to get at what it means to be not just a woman, because it's bigger than that for her. That's certainly where she starts. But even, you know, you get back to An Angel at My Table, and it's the early sexual stuff that the character sees as a child that stays with her. And it is that part of herself that she's always trying to understand and is both scared of and trying to comprehend. And in a larger view, that's what Campion is doing as a humanist, as a director. It's not just about sex. It's just the easiest way to talk about how uncomfortable we all are with ourselves and trying to find out who we are and what we want to be.
Yeah. So, Aaron?
I'm going to co-sign on all of that, and then I'm going to add power dynamics. Usually, I mean, within a sexual relationship or within, like, the context of sexual politics, as it is, but not always. But power dynamics play a huge role in all of her films, and
really subversive.
Where a person is in, like, the society or the family that they take up, and how they can move up or down with varying things. Again, usually sex, but also just gender politics and age. She does a lot with children. That exploring how we can get beyond where we started and take our own power back.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. You know, I think there's also, and this may be, you know, it's not so much a theme, but what it plays into her presentation, but there's also a lot of surrealism or semi-surrealist aspects that she plays with some of the visual, and I'm not going to say themes, but some of the visual motifs here, and she uses it to go through an explanation or a presentation of the themes that both of you have mentioned. I just thought that was that
especially in her Australian films.
Yes, especially in those. I'm thinking in particular the very trippy shit in Holy Smoke, which is a movie that I have very mixed feelings on. I don't hate it like a lot of people, but I also don't love it. but we'll get to that that discussion later. I'm sure. Excuse me. So now I'm going to go to you, Aaron, and ask you this big question. What is her strength, her biggest strength as a director?
I mean, I'd be hard-pressed not to say her visual style. Quite frankly, she is one of the great visual artists of modern cinema. She has an almost painterly eye, even in moments that feel like they don't need it. It's there. I think that's probably number one. Number two, I think that she has a really good grasp. This is more of a writer thing than a director thing. Actually, it's both. It's both. I think she has a really good grasp on her characters and how to lead her actors, how to play those characters. Even in the films, the very few, the one film that doesn't really work for me by her, the acting, the performances are great. I really feel like she's an excellent director of actors, and I think that she's an excellent writer of characters. It's just sometimes the story end of it that gets bogged down a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was going to say, for me, it probably is, and this is going to sound, I was going to say that, you know, a lot of people like to point to John Ford as, you know, the great landscape storyteller of the first 50 years of cinema. And there have been a lot of people who have used landscapes in amazing ways. But when you look at Campion's body of work, I would have to put her right up there with Ford and a very select few in terms of how she uses landscapes and her use of space and place. So it really is her greatest strength. But her greatest strength as a director isn't just that. It's how she always, always, always keeps it focused on character and the interior of the character. The people that don't seem to get her movies that much, I think, probably get blown away just by the visuals and miss just how much storytelling is going on without dialogue. And I think that is one of her great strengths, is her ability to tell a story visually without any dialogue. And, you know, hats off to her. So, Perry.
you have both taken elements of exactly what I was going to say. So I will absolutely co-sign on, she's a brilliant director of actors. And I think this is, I wanted to mention that most because I believe it isn't said a lot. I don't think that's noted with enough firmness, because it's not just her female characters. The men are all spectacular too, because she does write people incredibly well, and agreed on the visuals. And here's what I'll say about her as a user of space. Here's what I think of when I think of Campion more than anybody else. And I'm going to invoke one of my cinematic gods here. So why I know it's a Campion film is there is such a sense of place. And I don't mean just outdoors, although certainly that's there. Even her interiors feel like real places. There's nothing feels like sets, right? And I think it's her ability to do that that lets her get away with having being able to understand exactly how far she can allow her actors to go theatrically. Like, the performances in her films aren't realistic, right? This is not a knock.
No.
This is a description. It is, they are more theatrical than we are used to. And in that sense, for me, even though she does entirely an opposite thing than this director that I adore, she's the closest thing to Renoir that I've seen since Renoir. Like,
I can definitely see that, you know, especially something like The Southerner. You know, there definitely is that element there, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised to find that she's a real fan of Renoir and a few others of that 30s, 40s period, you know, because there definitely seems to be influence there.
And all of that is to say what her, for me, to put it in a nice little bow, her greatest skill is mood. She just knows how to establish a mood that is not quite real, but is totally recognizable, and a way to dip me slowly, to steep me in this mood that she wants to create. It was such a pleasure to rewatch The Piano. I probably haven't watched it in 20 years, and I watched it a bunch. It did not disappear for me. I had it on Laserdisc. I watched it a lot, but it had been a very long time, and even I had forgotten how perfect it is. I would like to see a universe in which Schindler's List comes out in 1994 and not 1993, and see how the world changes.
Yeah, but then you know, we may still be searching for Spielberg's first Oscar, because I'm not sure anything was going to stop Forrest Gump. And then, of course, you'd also have, instead of the great Gump fiction debate, it would be the great fiction Gump list debate.
Which is a more interesting debate.
now that said, had Billy Wilder made Schindler's List, it may have come out in 1992, because man, could that guy shoot a film quickly.
Although, as
he's gotten older, Spielberg's learned to shoot films very quickly. I mean, look how quickly Fablemans came together.
Mm-hmm.
And West Side Story, for that matter.
Yep, Marty can't do that anymore. Yep, I know.
Yeah, well, you know, Scorsese also has to make movies that are 5 hours long and cost $5 zillion and cast actors that are a million years old, and then they have to spend twice the original budget to make them look like 70.
And it's still brilliant.
Yes. Now that is done. Now, folks out there, I am not knocking The Irishman. I love that movie, and Scorsese is one of my cinematic heroes. But you know, it is a thing that's been happening. You know, I mean, his last three movies I mean, I think each one has gone up by like 30% in the budget. It's astonishing. The special effects on The Irishman I think half that budget went to de-aging, and I'm not kidding.
Mm-hmm.
But enough of that diversion. Perry, now that you have fawned over Campion, you get to Kvetch. So what is her weakness? If she does have one, what do you think might be a flaw with her?
She's one of those filmmakers that is an artist, so the rules don't apply. That said, I don't know that she's I don't know if she's weak with narrative or if she just doesn't care. And I mean that in the best way. I mean that she would
figure
out how to tell the story without having to sit there and tell you the story, which is why, for me, Portrait of a Lady is the weakest film because it's got the strictest plot it's got to follow. Like, I remember that film the least of all of them, and I think that's a big reason why. The performances are great. It looks amazing. But I think you can see it in the early films, especially something like Two Friends, where, you're a young filmmaker, so you do this script that's in front of you. That's a plot-heavy movie. But all the same, it's told reverse chronologically, so you're not it's all about, laying the groundwork for the tragedy that's going to come at the end. So you don't have to tell it in a traditional sense. And even her films feel so long because she's not interested in rushing to get to anything. Super economical. She's not slow for the sake of being slow. She's not forcing you to pay attention differently. She is forcing you to pay attention exactly how she wants you to pay attention, but that's not the same thing as challenging somebody to pay attention. If it's that, it's narrative, which is also why as great as Top of the Lake is, it's not quite like the other stuff. It feels different.
No,
to me.
No, and Top of the Lake, Top of the Lake is great. But we're not going to get into that too much. I planned originally to get into that a bit tonight, but I decided earlier this week that we're going to do an entire show on the two Top of the Lake series. Later this summer. So, references and everything are going to be, that's fine. But tonight, if anybody out there is wondering, how come we're not mentioning Top of the Lake too much? It's because we're kind of saving the energy and the views for that show, which it's not going to be that much later in the summer. It may even be very early summer. It may even be as soon as June. I was actually thinking about Top of the Lake. I'm just going to say this. I do think it's great, but I think that may be the one that has that for me has maybe her greatest. Use of place, space, and landscape, and I'm just going to leave that there, and then we'll get into that later. But Portrait of a Lady, is it wrong for me to say that I've never been the biggest Henry James fan? I respect him without loving his work. I probably actually enjoy Edith Wharton's work more than Henry James, but that's me. I do think that she probably isn't as interested in you know, strict plot. And is that a weakness? Maybe, maybe not. It's certainly a choice. I mean, you look at, you know, a guy like David Lynch, he doesn't give a flying fuck about plot.
Right.
And people bitch about that all the time, and I personally don't see it as a flaw, but that's me. So, Aaron.
I don't think it's a flaw until it is.
Yeah. Bingo.
And I think that's probably her only flaw, is that happens occasionally. I think the reason that a lot of people thought Power of the Dog was confusing is because of this very aspect. She decided to unveil the major plot twist at the end of the film through a series of, you know, dialogue of shots without any dialogue. And if you don't really understand what's happening, you don't understand what he's doing, you're going to miss, like, how malicious it is.
And that's a movie that
can
really does
a viewer. It can really throw a viewer off.
I was going to say, that's a movie that I think, for the reasons you're mentioning, really does demand and bear up to repeated viewings.
Absolutely. And I do think it's a well-plotted film. I think of her films, that it might be her best plotted film.
It's definitely better plotted
one
than
based
Holy
on
Smoke
a novel,
or In the Cut.
But that she was... What's that?
Sorry, I was going to say it's better plotted than Holy Smoke.
But yeah, I would say again, like, it's not a real issue most of the time. Occasionally, it becomes an issue.
Yeah. So now, Aaron, I'm going to ask this question, and that is and it's a two-part question. I'm going to ask both parts so that you can answer both parts together, and then Perry can do the same. But what do you see as her influences, and have you seen her having any influence on other filmmakers?
Gosh. I'm going to answer the second part first. When she won the Directors Guild for Power of the Dog, it started with Denis Villeneuve talking about how, because he was Canadian, he had like a hockey jersey with Spielberg's name on the back. Like, that's how much he loves Spielberg. And it became this big, like, love fest for Spielberg. And I love Spielberg, too. Like, that's fine. Whatever. But when Maggie Gyllenhaal introduced Jane Campion, she said, well, I didn't have a hockey jersey. But if I did, it would have Campion's name on the back. And I think that statement by itself is what I'm trying to get at. I think Jane Campion is her own artist, and I don't see, like, her themes or her visual style, like, necessarily rubbing off on a generation of filmmakers, but her existence has made an entire generation of female filmmakers possible.
She's
without
somebody
Jane
to
Campion,
aspire
we
to.
Don't. Right.
Without,
like,
emulating.
Exactly. She is a different demographic Spike Lee. She's the one, she's the person who says, oh, it's possible. We can do this. We can tell our own stories. And so, like, yes, she's an inspiration, though I don't know how influential her actual filmmaking is, because I don't know how possible it even is for someone else to replicate her style. It is so uniquely her. As far as her influences go, they're everywhere. Perry mentioned Renoir, and I definitely agree with that. I was actually just thinking about her Criterion Closet picks. Or, no, sorry, her Criterion Top 10. So all of these are films that have been on Criterion. But I think that they tell the story of her career. I'm just going to read this list off real quick. Seven Samurai, if you can't see that, or at least Kurosawa of the work. The Night Porter, The Fireman's Ball, The Obscure Object of Desire, Contempt, Tokyo Story, La Strada, Scenes from a Marriage, Samurai 1, and Badlands. Like, all of that's in her work. All of it.
Yeah.
Yep. And I don't know what else to say. Like, I'm just going to let her speak for herself on that, because that list is so clear. I think it's so clearly, and I'm going to pick out, and you, I mean, yeah, Bergman. I'm going to pick out.
We've never spoken of Bergman on this show before, Aaron, so go ahead.
Yeah, I know. Scenes from Marriage specifically, though, like the way they talk about, like, the power dynamics and the gender politics and the sexual politics within an intimate space. She does it with more stylistic panache than Bergman does in Scenes from a Marriage. You could also easily pick out Bergman's Smiles of a Summer Night for the same basic themes. But, like, that it thematically is so much there, whereas, like, the rest of it is more like visual stuff, like, that you can see the influence on.
She's just so much better Malick than Malick.
You'll definitely have to join us for the Malick show in that case later this summer.
You got it.
Ooh, did I just spoil? Yeah, so Perry, your thoughts here?
You know, I'm gonna plead ignorance on influences, because I another thing that makes Campion so specific and so individual and so, I agree with you, seemingly unreplicatable is what we've been talking about. She's from New Zealand. In Australia, mm-hmm. And that's though I don't know the cultural influences. I mean, I know them in the grand scheme of things. I understand why the Maoris are in the piano, but I don't have any idea of what she took in on a daily basis, right? I can't think of a director who has the status she has who isn't, like, it's not this show-offy list of influences and what she loved, and she's not trying to replicate what she saw as a kid, and she's not trying to replicate her Hollywood heroes. She's marching to her own beat. And so I don't have a good answer for influences. I can only look at it and see, yes, Malick is the other really obvious one to me, where it's like there's definitely influence there. And like I said, I think she's a better Malick than Malick. For all of her problems with narrative, she's much better with it than Malick is. And then an influence, agreed entirely. She's this utter signpost, and I don't think that especially if you look at her shorts and the Sofia Coppola shorts, oh, Sofia was paying attention. Sofia was paying very close attention. And throughout,
yes.
I mean, you can see it in all of Sophia's work, not just early stuff. I think she owes a giant debt to a director who is as rigorously subtle as she is. I think that's anybody who's willing to worry about their characters first is going to pay attention to what Jane Campion has accomplished.
Now, you know, I was going to pose this question to you first, Perry, so you're probably going to hate me for it, given what you just said. But where do you think Campion fits in terms of the story of Australian and New Zealand movies? I mean, I was thinking stuff, you know, people like, say, a George Miller or a Peter Jackson, and obviously people far less known than those two, like the gentleman that did, say, Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, even a Peter Weir, and a few others. But just to get us going, where do you think she fits in terms of those people and their contributions to Australian and New Zealand cinema?
In the most, like, ridiculously boiled down possible answer I could give you, in all of the directors that we've talked about together over the years, like, I think the example, she's Richard Linklater, right? She is the ultimate art house artist. I mean, Miller's a genius, but also loves to dabble in exploitation and likes to play with that. And Jackson is Spielberg, and that's great. But I think, you know, I really like Baz Luhrmann and take him quite seriously. But I will argue that Campion is the one they should all chase. I'm not saying Luhrmann's perfect, but I think he's genuinely interesting. And he's made one spectacular movie.
I think I can guess which one it is.
I think she's the shining light.
I can definitely see it. So, Aaron, you?
I'm not going to hedge anything. She's the best. She is. First of all, let's say that I do think that there is very subtle differences between Australian and New Zealand. New Zealander film, though they play with a lot of the same stuff, and Campion has done both. She has made Australian and New Zealander films.
Yeah, and that's why I mentioned it.
But I think that taking that region of the world into account, I think she is the best.
That kind of oceanic region.
The level of mastery she's reached, and the relative lack of dreck is both
we're blazing right along here. So, Aaron, the next question is going to be this. What is our least favorite Campion film? And why?
Admittedly, I have to give this film another watch at some point. So, know that this is incomplete data. But as of the recording of this episode of Cathode Ray Mission, my least favorite Jane Campion film is In the Cut. And it is because I think that she got caught up in the shock value of the sex instead of just using sex the way she normally does. I think she really wanted to push the envelope with it this time. And I think it was bold, and I respect the attempt. But I think that it just ended up being the thing instead of being, like, the thing that actually isn't the thing and hints at what the actual thing may be.
I'll co-sign that. Perry?
Okay, two things. The answer I gave earlier, it's Portrait of a Lady for me, which is it's pretty and dull. It's beautiful.
Well, and let me pause you right here. Let me pause you right here, Perry.
Okay.
It was a coin flip for me between In the Cut and Portrait of a Lady. Now, I don't hate Portrait of a Lady. I want to say that I don't hate it. I just found myself thinking, I've seen this before, and this is Jane Campion, so why isn't it better? Let me go on. Let you go
years
on.
Years later. No, it's okay. Decades later. I only saw it in the theater. I've never gone back to it. I've never wanted to go back to it. But I will tell you, I remember Martin Donovan's every scene in it. He is so good in that movie. So, like, it has stayed with me in ways. And, again, like you were saying, I don't hate the movie by any means. I just think it's far and away the least interesting of them. It's probably not the worst, but it's the only one I don't want to revisit. And since I think this is going to be the opportunity to do it, I'm going to defend In the Cut. I actually like it a great deal. I think In the Cut's only problem is that it's Meg Ryan and not Nicole Kidman. I think it would be a much better film with Nicole Kidman there. And Meg Ryan made to look like Nicole Kidman. Nicole Kidman produced it. You're off. Meg Ryan is the wrong face here. And she's not a terrible actress. But you're making me think of Nicole Kidman, so just make it Nicole Kidman. This would be a much better movie.
Could you have imagined if they'd even had Kate Winslet again, if she'd have tried working with Winslet again, if it might have not been a better movie even then?
Well, or just test Jennifer Jason Leigh. She's right there. But that's not the point. I'll step back now and say that, Aaron, have you seen it since you first saw it?
No, I haven't.
So it was one of the ones that I made a point to revisit before doing the episode because I hadn't seen it probably since I saw it in the theater. And here's what's interesting. That memory you have of the sex being so envelope pushing, that was marketing. That was the reviews. That was the hype.
Well, I watched the director's cut, and I have, you know, vivid memories of an actual, like, blowjob happening on screen. That it was truly like borderline pornographic at least one scene.
It works. The movie works. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. I'm not trying to convince Aaron that it's not a coin flip. Sorry, Aaron. But it is all of the themes that we just said we really like her dealing with, and she deals with them very well. And it is one that is sort of, you know, if it's weak, it is because it is another one that is kind of pushing towards genre, which we've agreed is not something she's terribly interested in. And so it gets into that weird dynamic of, oh, am I asking you to fulfill my genre requirements for this? Can I not let that go? Like, you've obviously let it go as the artist. And since she's an artist, it's my job to let that go. And it's, I think it's a really good movie. It's a really good movie that just I wish had a more compelling lead actress. That's the only problem with it, and that might be her only fault ever in the casting department.
So now we come to our top three movies, and I'll just say this. Number three, for me, it's Power of the Dog. Number two, Bright Star. Number one, The Piano. So, Perry, what are your top three?
I have been debating this question since you posed it. I'm going to go the other way, because number one's The Piano, and number two is Power of the Dog. This I know for sure. Three, honestly, there are two or three different films that could pop in here, but after just going through about half of them again, I'm gonna go off the reservation because I haven't seen it, and it might just be a recency bias, but oh, did I really like Two Friends? I was surprised how much I liked Two Friends. Which, granted, is TV. It was made for TV. It's obviously made for TV. But it does, you know, maybe as much as I love an artist who will throw away narrative, I like narrative. And so I was really happy to watch her do something that is so obviously story-bound, even though she gets around it by telling it reverse chronologically. And it does have – it is constructed visually – and even sonically, so that last scene just destroys you. And it does. It's a brilliantly conceived, coordinated, orchestrated piece of work to get to an emotional payoff. And that for me is where maybe this is where it ties in with her disinterest in narrative, and where it does maybe arguably kind of like you were saying, when it does become a fault, there is no Campion film that ends with one exception with me going, oh wow, like it she never leaves me at the high point of my admiration for the work. Power of the Dog is the exception, which does have an ending that you go, wow. The only other time I've seen that out of her is Two Friends, and I will say Power of the Dog succeeds because it is one of the few character studies there are other films that have done this, but it's a character study, but you don't understand till the end of the movie what that character's been. And that's a really great accomplishment to pull that off.
Yes. Yes. So now I'm going to do what we always do, and where overall?
Ask me what my top three are.
I want Aaron's top three.
Oh, no. Yep, sorry. I'm so sorry. I guess Perry spoke so much, and so eloquently it felt like we'd all.
Yeah,
we'd
blame
all,
me, right? Yeah, okay.
So, hey, look, I'm the one that has to put up with nasty 5-year-olds all day. No, I'm kidding. They're not that bad. It was just one kid today. So, and there goes my career. So, yes. Aaron, your choices.
Let's see here. Number three is Bright Star. I don't think she has made a film with more beautiful interiors. And let me just say, Janet Patterson, who did both the costume and production design on that film, was absolutely robbed of an Oscar win for costume design, and not even nominated for production design. Like, did you see the Oscars in 2009? Where was she? Where was
yeah.
she? Avatar won the Best Production Design Oscar in 2009.
Interesting.
It was designed on a computer. Ben Whishaw once again proves that he is perhaps the most undervalued actor of his generation.
Preach, Aaron, preach.
Mm-hmm. Ben Whishaw's amazing.
Abby, is it Abby Cornish or is it the other one?
Yes.
One of the Cornish sisters. gives her finest performance to date, and it's not even close. She was just remarkable in that film. Number two is apparently everyone's number two, except for Adam, you had it at number three. Power of the Dog, and you can't go, it's piano. It was always the piano.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I was very shocked when I saw Bryce Harper, because I had not seen it until the lead up to this show. And, I was pretty sure it was going to be, the piano, Power of the Dog, and then I was actually leaning towards Angel at My Table. And then all of a sudden, Bright Star.
That was my number.
Like, oh, yep.
Yeah.
There's my number three. I said because I said this just became my number two because where the fuck has this movie been? Wow.
Yeah, it's a spectacular piece of work.
But yeah, sorry. I just had to interject there, Aaron.
No, you're absolutely.
So you will actually get to get the last main question tonight, and that is this one. Where does she rank all time?
Oh, man. So...
As always, we don't have to be, like, super specific, and I know you have your own special ranking system. So just elaborate.
I do. So as you know, or as you may not know, but I hope you do.
He's very Greek here, folks.
I have a tiered director's list based on Greek mythology. And at the top is Bergman. And then we have the 12 Titans. And then we have the 12 gods, and then so on and so forth. She is firmly on the Mount Olympus tier, which is the 12 gods, which would put her in the top 25. I have seriously, since going through her films again, been trying to figure out how I could get her onto the Titan level, because I feel like she really should be there, but I just don't think I can do it. Because I don't know which of my precious darlings I could cut.
It's just like, I'll tell you, I did a recent video game list on another platform, and damn, I tried to get Tetris into my top 10, and I just couldn't, and yet it may be the game that I've spent more time with than any other game ever in my life. So I know the struggle. The struggle is real. It's like you want to. You know you should, but you just can't find the way, and it pisses you off. But it still feels right as much as it feels wrong. So, I would say she's probably, for me, I don't know if I'd have her she top 20, but is she top 30? Perhaps top 40? Oh, without question. Probably just without looking at my list, have to say she'd probably fall somewhere around 32 to 35. This is a remarkable talent. This is someone, she could be just inside the top 30, like at a 28 or 29. But, yeah, she really, I don't think she's made an actively bad film. She's made one or two that I don't like. Or one or two that I didn't enjoy that much. Even in the cut, you know, Perry does make some interesting points, but it is her weakest film for me. But they're still great movies, and that's rare. I mean, even among people that have smaller filmographies, you usually see two or three movies that you're like, okay, yeah, they think you don't find it with her. So Perry, what about you?
Yeah, that's what I would use. That's exactly what I was going to get at. The only reason she doesn't fall off my tongue when I start, you know, trying to list the greatest directors of all time is, you know, you take 14 years off, it's kind of easy to just let it go. And you know, she, with the, you know, we've all, the top two are fairly obvious and cement her. But boy, I'm really glad she made Power of the Dog, because without it, I don't know that she is as revered as she deserves to be and as influential as she most certainly was well before Power of the Dog. I think this is going to sound so obnoxious, and I don't mean it to be. I think if there are, as long as there are serious lovers of film as art, this is a director we need to keep talking about. This is a director that I fear gets lost, because she's so not American. I truly think this is our culture. I think this is a cultural prejudice for us, and I mean us as American filmgoers. Like, we can love foreign directors all we want, but there's at some point there's a fence that goes up, and I think that to keep her alive, talked about in American film criticism, yeah, we need to keep talking about Campion, and going back through a half a dozen of those films again reminded me of that. I'm guilty.
Yeah,
myself.
Well, you know, I have to say I agree, and, you know, my small part, I hope this show does help, at least for a few people, keep it alive. Also, can I just mention that this is also our first episode on a female director. You know, and I figured, you know, it's not only long overdue, but why not start with one of the very best? And I don't mean just very best female directors. I mean one of the very best directors, period.
Period.
Yeah.
You know, so let's give her more than her due. So, you know, I will go back to you, Perry. Is there anything that we haven't mentioned yet that you would like to mention before we get going here?
I'll just say that Cody Smith McPhee should have won the Best Supporting Actor Oscar. That's all I'm going to say. I think that about sums up everything else I'd want to say. we've covered Campion, everything I wanted to say. I feel like I said, or you guys said it better than I would have. So I feel really good about that. But yeah, Cody Smith McPhee in Power of the Dog is so good. Is
so good.
Jesse Plemons
as well.
Especially if you watch
Kirsten
it a second
Dunst
time.
Dunst should have won the Oscar too.
It is. I can't figure out, guys. Give me your opinion on this. Is it the greatest backhanded compliment ever, or genuine tribute if you win Best Director and your film wins no other Oscars?
Yes.
What does that mean? Like, is that truly you didn't have the best of anything and you put it all together better than anybody? I don't know. I can't figure out what that means.
We had some really weird Oscars for a few years. I think that's the main thing, and there's also been some really weird voting trends in politics, and it's not just been at the Oscars, but the Emmys and a few others over the last few years.
Ultimately, it's just
a head scratcher.
I honestly think that what happened was that Netflix got lazy with its campaign because she had it so in
Netflix
the bag.
Netflix got lazy? What do you mean?
And
I've
that,
never heard of things.
And that, like, her story and her momentum and her being her kept her personal campaign alive well after Netflix pulled the plug on the movies campaign, and that Apple just went all in on that little crowd pleaser of theirs, and they were able to ride the wave. And I definitely thought
Coda was a fine little movie, but
it was, but like Power of the Dog is going to be one that it's going to be the Goodfellas to Dances with Wolves or the Fargo to English Patient in 10 years. People are going to be like, how did this happen? And we'll have to tell them.
We'll have to tell the story. We can't let it die. I agree.
I think it is really... the other one that really gets me is that, like, Kirsten Dunst seemed to be running away with Best Supporting Actress that year. And she just, like, disappeared halfway through the season. And it's like, what happened? She had this on lock. And that was casting made in heaven. Like, those two were just meant to work together.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad it finally happened. And
well, you know, there's an episode we'll have to do, Oscar winning head scratchers. What should have won?
get the popcorn ready. That's going to be a 3-hour deal.
At the risk of offending so many people, I'm going to pile on here and say. Knowing what else has won in the last 10 years, Coda is the weakest Best Picture winner of the last 10 years, by far. Which is only to say, I think the performances in Green Book are really good. Green Book's not a good movie, but I think the performances are incredibly well done and entertaining. Coda is such a minor thing that tells me nothing new. I'm shocked Coda won. I am nearly distraught that Coda won. And not that Power of the Dog had to win, but just that was like the most – that was everything that was wrong with the preferential voting of the Oscars. They decided –
You know, people were talking about Coda and how it had no chance of winning going in, that it was going to be Power of the Dog. And the thing is, those last few weeks, I had kind of sniffed it out. I went – nope, shit, it's going to be Coda. And people are like, no, it's Power of the Dog, Power of the Dog, Power of the Dog. And, you know, I mean, you can go back and look at the posts I made on say, Facebook, if you can go back that far. I was not predicting Power of the Dog. I was predicting Coda because I just had this sense that, that like you said, the preferential balloting was going to go in favor. And I was also using, you know, like Green Book logic, whereby, you know, it's not a bad movie, but it is a weaker film than the one that should have won, and so therefore it's going to win.
Mm-hmm. And wait, Netflix ran the campaign for Roma too, so there you go. They dropped the ball.
Yep.
Netflix also dropped the ball on Bardo this year.
Yes, they did. Bad.
And that's why Marty left for Apple.
Yes, but then Marty.
Marty the Oscar
Apple,
to.
And that's why Apple told him to go. And then Hulu's And then Hulu said, we'll make a miniseries with you. And even DiCaprio couldn't stop Marty from spending money, and so they were both out of a job.
They even changed the director, and they couldn't stop it from hemorrhaging money.
Nope.
So what about you, Aaron? Anything that you have to say about this before we get going?
I made some notes because you didn't ask a question that you normally ask, which is important collaborators. And so I just want to give a shout out.
I did forget about that, honestly.
Her longtime producer, Jan Chapman.
Yep.
Her longtime editor, Veronica Jeanette. And then the previously mentioned costume / production designer, because that's a lot of work. I don't know. That means that this woman was designing the costumes and the sets and, you know, everything you see on film that's not an actor's face. Janet Patterson. Specifically for her work on Bright Star, but they did a lot of work together. And those three women did a lot of work for Campion over the years. Jan Chapman produced most of her films going all the way back to Sweetie. So long-standing relationship there.
So
and
before we actually go... I have to do what we always do and take a small pause to do housekeeping, where I get to plug the shows coming up here on Deviant Legion. Coming up on Sunday, the 16th of April at 8 p.m., Rock This Town Radio with TC, the second annual 420 Extravaganza. On the 19th at 7 p.m., The Night of the Lepus. And on the 23rd at 8 p.m., Rock This Town Radio with TC. Lithium is my co-pilot. Now, this show, Cathode Ray Mission, will be back next week on April 21st with a look at the one-season series, The Adventures of Briscoe County Jr., which starred Bruce Campbell of Evil Dead fame. We'll get into that with you, Aaron, and Carl, and maybe one other person next week. Now, we will not be back on the 28th, but we will be back on the 5th. And we will be back on the 5th of May with a look at the director, Kelly Reichardt. And, you will both be back for that episode, so looking forward to both those episodes, and I hope everyone out there will join us for those as well. Should be quite interesting. So, once again, is there anything, now that we've had another minute to think about it, that you would like to say before we go? Perry?
Just to continue the thought of the question posed before the before house cleaning, I would give a special. It's not my first answer by any means, but I think if we're going to talk about Campion as a whole, then it pays to just give Stuart Dryberg some big old credit, because let's face it, The Piano looks about a billion times better than Angel at My Table, which is a good looking movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was great
for
TV. I'll say.
Especially
I know,
for one that was shot to be a miniseries.
Right. And
unlike, then it became a movie.
Right. Unlike, say, forgive me for my umpteenth Scorsese reference of the evening, but, you know, Michael Chapman is a big reason Marty becomes who he becomes. That's the perfect collaborator at the perfect time for Taxi Driver. And Stuart Dryberg, based on everything else he shot, isn't anywhere near Michael Chapman's talent level. So I'm glad to see that it's not just she took exactly what she needed from him in all the best ways, and then continue to have good relationships with other cinematographers. I just wanted to give Stuart Dreiberg some credit for the piano.
And Aaron?
I think I am good now.
Okay. Well, with that, I will thank everyone out there for listening. I will thank the two of you for participating. As always, we couldn't do this without all of you. And we will see you next week. Hopefully you'll listen. And Perry, I'll see you in, 3 weeks now? So, yep, 3 weeks.
Looking forward to it.
Yes, so am I. And with that, we will call it a good night. And 1, 2, 3, good night.
Good night. Good night.